Today, we're talking about trading future income for a college education. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Well, hey, we've been talking just off and on a little bit actually recently about the student loan crisis, and it's reaching the point that individuals and institutions both are having to look for alternatives to debt for funding a college education. And one of those methods that's being tried out is the income sharing agreement, where you trade a percentage of your future income to the school or the lender in exchange for that education today. Brad, help us to understand this kind of agreement. This is the first time I've heard of this, but then my son's almost through college, so you know, I'm about done with that process.
Yeah, it's a little out of the box. Not that it hasn't been tried in the past, but it's becoming a little more popular as institutions are looking at it again. Basically, the school or investors are buying a portion of a student's future earnings capacity in exchange for paying for some of their schooling today. So in the past, it's always been a loan being made to them, and then the student takes out the debt, has to pay that back, where in this case, it's not an actual amount that has to be repaid. It's basically a promise that you're going to give up a portion of your future income in exchange for the education. And the amount that you're going to be paying back, as far as the percentage of income you're giving up, the length of time that you're going to be giving that up, those things are dependent on the school, the career path you're choosing, and ultimately what your future job is expected to earn you. So, for example, if you're an English major and expected to go and take on a teaching job, you're probably going to have to give up a higher percentage of your income for a longer period of time than someone coming out with either a finance major or a computer science major. So it all boils down to this calculation that's based on how long it's going to take you to repay this amount that you receive for your education, as well as probably a little hope for profit on the institutional side of it as well.
Well, Brad, what is that potential benefit for the student that would give them a reason to really want to enter into such a long-term agreement like this?
So there's a couple of reasons why students may want to look at this. The first one is that they may have actually exhausted some of their cheaper loan options. So maybe they can't get the subsidized loans anymore, so they're just looking for an alternative. The other side is that we have almost $1.6 trillion in student loans outstanding right now. A lot of people are getting tired of student loans and having that uncertainty of what their job and their income is going to look like on the other side of the college experience. So these deals are a way that allow the student to get the education without taking on the old-fashioned form of the student loan debt that they're all tired of, and instead just signing over a portion of that future income. And a lot of these agreements will have some kind of an income floor. So if the student is concerned that they're going to come out and not get a good paying job, then in some of these cases, they don't even have to make payments back until they get above a certain threshold. So that may give them a little bit of comfort. And then on the other side of it, the student may be thinking, you know what, if I get a really good paying job, I don't really care if I'm giving up a bigger piece of that income because I've got more to keep for myself as well. So they're kind of hedging against the uncertainty of what that future income looks like.
Well, Brad, you've shared with us that you do have some reservations and words of caution to people who are thinking about this approach to education. And the first of those is the way this kind of a structure would impact a college graduate mentally. And I'll tell you, I'm just trying to put myself in a college graduate's shoes. And, you know, looking at this, it kind of makes me really actually a little tense. I'm not sure this is something that I could go for. Can you share your concerns?
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty with how this is all going to play out because it is so new and there's a lot of different forms of this structure taking place. The one thing that I think about first is how is this going to affect the graduate mentally? And the first thing that a lot of people are going to think of is, okay, well, how do I end up paying back less? I don't want to overpay for that education that I got, which the way to pay less is to earn less. And I don't like anything that's going to affect the mentality of the individual in the personal development side of it. And those first jobs that we take and how much we make on those and that job development of how we make ourselves more valuable and earn more money, the way we start our career oftentimes has ripple effects that last for our entire career. So anything that's going to change that from being, I need to go develop myself, to being, oh, you know what, I can pay less back to the institution if I make less, that concerns me. And I just, we don't know how that's going to play out, but that is certainly a concern that I have.
We're back. You're listening to Mornings with Kelly and Steve here on Moody Radio. And joining us this morning, Brad Graber of Investing in Truth. We're talking about trading our future income for a college education. Well, Brad, economically, what concerns do you have for the student and the lender side?
Yeah, so on this, from an economic perspective, I like to think of it from both sides of the transaction. And so when I think of it as investors coming in and looking at this as a possibility as an investment, investors are always going to look at the relationship between risk and return. So how much risk am I taking? What's the likelihood I'm going to get paid back, essentially? And then how much am I making for taking that level of risk? And the normal investment in the education space has been student loans. And as we've talked about before, student loans have almost every possible protection that you can put on there for the lender, including that they can't be discharged in bankruptcy for the person that took out the debt. So when you have that much of a secure investment, the investor is not expecting to get a huge return because there's a high probability they're going to get paid back. Well, now we're talking about an arrangement that's different, and it doesn't have those degrees of certainty. So there's more risk, and the investor isn't sure of exactly how much they're going to get repaid because it's all dependent on the job that that individual is going to take out and how much they're going to make in those future years. So by assuming that higher rate of or higher degree of risk, they're going to expect a higher rate of return for taking on that risk. So that tells me that in general terms, if it's an investor looking for a profit that's on the other side of the transaction, that I should probably expect that I'm going to pay more back than I would have if I would have just taken on one of the cheaper forms of a student loan.
Well, Brad, you've also shared you have a concern when it comes to the structure of the agreement. So what are you thinking there?
Yeah, my first fundamental rule of investing is that you shouldn't invest in something you don't understand. And when it comes to an income share agreement, I like to look at, again, the two parties that are involved. And again, when we're talking about investors being the one side of it, that's typically going to be wealthy individuals or institutional investors that are being now paired up with college kids. And we have to ask ourselves, who do we expect really to come out on the top of any kind of agreement that is set between wealthy individuals and institutions and college kids? And even if we can get college kids up to the point that they feel like they fully understand these contracts, my concern is how much about the future and how much of turning themselves essentially into a stock investment and giving up some of their upside, how much are they really going to understand? There's just so much uncertainty. It is so complex. It's hard enough to understand the long-term ramifications of student loans, and those are pretty straightforward. Now we're getting into something much more complex. My concern is when we're pairing up people that do this for a profession and are looking for a profit and college kids, that the college kids, I would be concerned that they're going to come in on the downside of that. And now I have to mention, though, that it's not always institutional investors and wealthy individuals on the other side. I've seen examples of this where colleges are actually using some of their funds and they're giving them out to the college kids in exchange for these income share agreements. They've put in some protections for the kids, and I read of one case where they're not actually even looking for a profit. They just want to get repaid, and then they're going to essentially pass that money back out to the next generation of college kids. So in cases like that, where the other side has benevolence involved in it and they're really looking out just for the benefit of the kids, these things can work. But as they get more and more popular, I think we're going to see more and more investors coming in as the other side of the transaction looking for profit, and that's where we really need to be cautious. So I would warn people, make sure you understand who all is involved, what's the motive of the other side, and just making sure we're looking at all the details of the contract.